Welcome to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, episode 77, with Sarah Kornack and Beth Ann Schwamberger. Today on the show, we're talking ebooks. Everything you wanted to know about writing an ebook, editing an ebook, formatting an ebook, launching an ebook, shopping carts, and affiliate programs in regards to an ebook. And the guests on the show today are extremely fun. It is our sister-in-law and our brother. You might remember Abby from Just a Girl and her blog. Well, it's her ebook that we're talking with her about, Building a Framework, Everything I Learned My First Year of Blogging. And Donnie and Abby both were very instrumental in creating the ebook and launching the ebook and selling the ebook. And the two of them combined are quite a team and have lots to share with us. If you're interested in Abby's ebook, you can always find it through our affiliate link. It's brilliantbusinessmoms.com/framework. I know you're going to love this episode, so let's get started.
You're listening to the Brilliant Business Moms Podcast, practical business advice for startup moms.
So today's show will be super fun because we actually get to sit down with our brother and sister-in-law, Donnie and Abby Lawson. Yes, we are making an exception for the first time by having a dude on our podcast because Donnie and Abby worked as a team to launch Abby's very first product, and that was her book, Building a Framework, Everything I Learned My First Year of Blogging. And their working relationship and the different strengths they bring to the table is just really fun to see. Abby, if you remember, was actually our very first guest on the podcast on June 10th of last year, 2014, which was also the launch day for her ebook. Since then, Donnie and Abby have done amazingly well with their ebook sales, and today we'll talk with them all about writing the book, launching and marketing the book, and everything in between. So welcome to the show, Donnie and Abby.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. This is going to be fun. Abby, could you talk about the motivation behind writing your book? How did the idea start?
Well, basically, Donnie made me do it. It's all his fault. I blame him.
I get blamed for a lot. You'll find that out.
No. I had started getting just like a string of emails asking me for blogging advice right around when I had been blogging for a year. And so I kept answering, you know, these different emails, and I couldn't believe they were asking me. I thought there's probably a lot better people they could be asking. But as the emails kept coming in, I thought, well, maybe, you know, I do know a little bit about this blogging stuff. And Donnie's like, you need to turn this into an ebook. All of those emails that you're writing, put them, you know, into an ebook form and sell it on your site. And I said, no, I haven't been blogging long enough. I don't know enough, you know, to be able to do that. So, but he kept urging me and pushing me. And as I kept getting those emails, I thought, okay, well, maybe there is something to this idea. So we sat down and kind of thought it out and created an outline and just went for it.
I love that. And again, I think that's such a testament to the way you guys work as a team, the fact that Donnie kind of came to you with the idea and gave you that encouragement to really go for it. So I'm really curious, though, because your ebook is really extensive, Abby. It's a lot of content and great advice on how to grow a blog. So clearly, it must have taken a lot of time to create. So how did you actually find the time to get the writing done, Abby? And I'm curious about how much time it actually took you to create.
Well, when I first started it, we booked a hotel room for me for the weekend. And I went away for a whole weekend. Donnie had our boys at home, and I just took our outline that we had created and started writing. So, and then I think later on in the process, we did that again. So I had two weekends where I was just kind of away by myself writing. And then besides that, I would just get up at 6 every morning, and from 6 to 7 in the morning, I would write. And I knew that, you know, I already was kind of feeling maxed out with my blogging schedule, and I didn't want to cut back on my blog posts. So the time wasn't just going to appear. I had to create it somehow. So that just became my routine. Every morning I would get up and I would write. And if the boys got up in that 6 to 7 window, Donnie was in charge of taking care of them. And so I was uninterrupted and just did that for a couple months. So it's hard to put it into hours, but just basically 2 big stints and then just plugging away little by little every day.
So then for the editing process, how did that work? Did you pull people on board to read your rough drafts, or was Donnie your editor before you refined it and polished it up, or how did you approach that?
Sure. So I kind of did it in waves. When I initially wrote the book, I wrote it in a Google Doc, so it was really shareable and easy to send to people. So Donnie was looking at it the whole time and would make suggestions, and I would bounce ideas off of him and stuff. After him, the first people I sent it to were, I sent it to my mom because she had no background in blogging. So I kind of wanted to get somebody who was coming at it from zero knowledge about the subject and see how it came across there. And I also sent it to my friend who had just been blogging for a few months. So she had a basic foundation, but not too much more than that. So they were the next readers. And then after that, I have a mastermind group on Facebook. There was about 10 of us at the time. And so they were the next people that I sent it to. And this is all still in like rough draft Google Doc form. So I had almost 10 to 15 people reading through it for me and sending me notes. And it was nice because they were all kind of in different phases of blogging, from like no knowledge to people who had been blogging actually longer than I had. And they all had different strengths. So somebody, one of them would send me grammar corrections. Another one would send me technical stuff and all different. So it was nice to have it in front of a lot of eyes, especially with the subject matter, wanting to make sure that I was really accurate and getting all my information correct before I put it out there.
That sounds like a great idea. And I love the fact that you brought on editors from varying experience levels. When you put your book on Google Drive and then you made it available to your editors through Google Drive, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Were they all looking at the exact same document and so they could see each other's corrections and notes and things?
They didn't correct right within the document. So they were, I think they could make comments, but most of them just wrote down their comments in an email and send it to me. So they could comment and they could view it, but they couldn't like edit anything.
And when we also shared it with some other people to edit. And when we did that, we made a copy of it into another Google Doc so that they couldn't mess with the original. And then they could select text and there's like a keyboard shortcut for leaving a comment. So we made sure we were backed up and we didn't just let anyone in there so they could delete the whole thing or anything like that.
They could have probably like taken the manuscript and done something like sold it as their own or something, but we trusted everybody we gave it to, so that wasn't a problem.
So I know within the book, Abby, you link to quite a few different resources that will help your readers out. And I know obviously you would want to be tracking, you know, how many people are clicking on those links. Can you talk about how you organized all of the resources and links within that ebook?
Yes, I let Donnie do it because he was better at that than me. So I'll let him talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah, so there's a plugin, there's a WordPress plugin called Pretty Link, and there's a light version that's free. It doesn't have all the features of the full version, but it had plenty for us. So all of the links in the ebook, we used a Pretty Link. So we would, for instance, we would make a link for Bluehost. It could be just a girl on her blog. com/Bluehost. And that would be the link in the book. So all the affiliate links in the book started with just a girl on her blog.com, then the slash, and then whatever we were redirecting them to. And the reason we did that is we could control the actual link from right within Abby's WordPress admin panel. So if our affiliate links changed, if the final destination of those links changed, we could update it. We wouldn't have to go back and fix all the links in the book. And also it just looks nicer too. You know, when someone's hovering over a link and it's nice and short and pretty and it doesn't have this like real long string of characters at the end, I think people are just more likely to click. Yeah, Pretty Link Lite was the plugin we used for that.
Okay, great. So I would guess, too, that having those pretty links in the ebook is a great way to track any affiliate sales that you might have generated directly from the ebook. Is that true?
Yeah, no. So it's it gives us a good idea of what links people are clicking on. You know, there's more advanced things you could do with Pretty Link that I didn't do, but it is helpful to know 350 people clicked on this link, or, you know, just 50 people clicked on this link. So there's some basic stats that you can see where people are clicking. Now Pretty Link doesn't report on actual income generated through those links. You know, that would be ShareSale or Bluehost or, you know, whatever type of affiliate link we used. But the Pretty Link plugin would at least show us what type of clicks we were getting. And so then we could take that number and figure out our conversion rate if we wanted to. You know, maybe MailChimp received 100 clicks and 5 people signed up. So then we know, okay, 5% of the people are actually converting through that link.
That makes sense.
So Abby, everything was done up to this point in your Google document. Walk us through the formatting process. How did you get it to look nice for your final PDF version?
We ended up going with iBooks Author, which is on Mac, to do the formatting. And at first I got really frustrated with it and I almost told Donnie I quit and I'm doing this in Word because I'm really comfortable with Word. I know a lot about it, but it took me like 2 days messing with the program to really like figure it out because it's not as intuitive. Once I did, I'm glad that we went with it because it has all the formatting right there for you. You're just basically filling in the blanks. It shows you where to put the titles. It has the spacing all done for you. And so I didn't have to figure that out on my own. So I basically was just taking and copying and pasting bits and pieces to get it all to match. And then I had to add my photos in afterwards, like one by one, and make it look good.
Yeah, some people use, I mean, iBooks Author is great because it's free and it has some pretty good features. A lot of people use some software from Adobe, but we just decided for this first one, we didn't want to pay for that and learn a more complicated piece of software. Is it, Abby, is it like InDesign?
Yeah. If you're a graphic designer, Adobe InDesign would be the best option to use. I am not. So iBooks Author was the next best thing for us.
It kind of seemed like there's a, you know, the top end would be Adobe InDesign, but it's expensive. It's harder to use. And then iBooks Author is a really good option that's free. And then some people who didn't want to learn how to use iBooks Author would just you can just create an ebook in Microsoft Word. I mean, there's a lot of different formatting things you can do there, and then just save it as a PDF. So if someone doesn't have a Mac, there's nothing wrong with spending a lot of time in Microsoft Word getting the formatting down.
Right. We did our second ebook. I wrote it in Word because it was printables and it was easier for me to kind of merge Word documents together, and it still came out looking nice. So definitely don't be afraid to use Word.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I had heard some discussion from our Facebook group about somebody who was having problems. Now, maybe this is just Word specific, I'm not sure, but she had all of these links in her document, but when she converted to PDF, her links were not working. Have you heard of that problem?
Yeah, we definitely ran into similar issues also with iBooks Author, I think, as well. So when we created the ebook, we would export it. This is an iBooks Author, but the same issue is in Word as well. You export it as a PDF file, but then you look at the PDF and all of a sudden all of your links aren't clickable. So obviously big issue. So what we did, and this is just kind of a workaround, and this is a known problem with Word and iBooks about exporting as PDFs, it doesn't retain your links. So you don't even have to put the links in the Word document or iBooks Author. What we did is we downloaded a trial of Adobe Acrobat Pro, opened up, this is after the ebook was done and exported as a PDF, we could open up the file in Acrobat Pro. And that piece of software makes it really easy to add in the links. So it's okay. Kind of a workaround for that. And
what we did do, though, is before we exported it, even if we didn't add an actual link in there, we made it look like a link, like it's a different color or underlined or whatever our formatting was for links. We made it look like that and then exported it and then put the links in. So you can tell where the links are.
Okay.
But we did have to add them after.
That's a great tip, Abby, on making sure you had those links bolded or the color you wanted, all of that before you went over into the Adobe program so you would know just where to go. And then it's just that simple process of inserting those links. That's something I probably wouldn't have thought of, and then I would have driven myself crazy.
Whenever you put the file into Acrobat, not only can you set up all your links, but you can also do links within the body of the PDF. So in the table of contents, all the different chapters are clickable, and those links will take you right to the specific chapter. You know, if you click on chapter 14 in the table of contents, it'll take you right to the beginning of chapter 14 in the book. So that's the very last step. I mean, for both of these ebooks, it was like the day before launch or 2 days before launch when we're like going through adding links in Adobe Acrobat, kind of the last step there.
And I think, if I'm remembering correctly, with iBooks Author, the external links worked when we exported it. It was just the internal links, like the ones from the table of contents to the chapter headings that we had to do with Acrobat.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay. So it was Word, where none of the links worked when creating a PDF from Word, but some of the links worked from iBooks Author. So there's a little bit difference there. So if you have a Mac, I would recommend iBooks Author over Word if you have that choice.
Very good to know.
So Abby and Donnie, you two have done such a great job of selling that first ebook. And rightly so, because I think it's an excellent book. Can you share with our audience a little bit more on those sales stats?
Sure. So Framework launched last June. So day one, and we did our best to build up to the launch. I mean, there's lots of pre-mentions, like the whole month leading up. So on day one, it sold 227 copies, and this was when we were doing the pay what you want pricing. So we ended up averaging a little less than $10 per sale. So $2,200 the first day. Day two, a little over $500. Day three, a little over $300. So the total number of sales the first week was 359 copies for $3,662. So with the pay what you want pricing, that came out to a little over $10 per book. You know, the price we recommended was $24, but we understood a lot of people were just going to pay a dollar to get the book, but we averaged a little over $10. And then since then, there's been some slower periods for sure of the book, but since June, we're talking in February here, since June, we've sold 1,400?
Yeah.
1,400 copies of the book, and we transitioned away from the pay what you want pricing in October. So it's been a fixed price of $24 since then. So that's kind of what the sales look like. And actually, surprisingly, you know, I thought things would just completely tail off. You know, we'll go weeks without mentioning this book anywhere on social media, on the blog. But the sales just kind of keep trickling in, and we don't have to do anything about it. It's kind of a passive way to make some extra income.
You keep mentioning the pay what you want pricing. Could you explain that to our listeners and walk us through your decision to use that pricing model for your launch?
Sure. Well, it was really important to me that, like, I know that for some people, they just do this. They want to try to make some side income while they're home with their kids or whatever. So I didn't want money to be the thing that stood in the way of them getting a hold of this book. So Donnie and I talked about it. We went back and forth probably, like, up until the day that we announced what the pricing was going to be, which was the day before launch, on whether this was a dumb idea, whether it was going to totally tank the book to just let people pay what they wanted or what they were able to. But at the end of the day, we decided to go with it. So we said the price is $24. If you are at a place right now where you can't afford that, we have set up our payment processor so that you can put in any amount from $1 or above, and it will let it go through. So it was, we let them pay what they want. And I am so glad we did. I mean, we might have left some money on the table. We'll never know, you know, what we would have made if we hadn't done that. But all we have gotten so many emails from people just saying thank you so much and, like, telling us their stories and where they are in their life and how, you know, they wish they could have paid the whole $24, but it was such a blessing to them to be able to get this information for a price that they could afford. Just, like, so many amazing and sometimes heartbreaking stories. And I mean, that in itself was worth it to me. And I mean, it's not like everybody paid a dollar. Like, we still made a good amount off of it. But do you want to talk about kind of the business end of that? That's, I do the feelings. He does the business. So.
Yeah. So, like, I had never really heard about this idea until a guy named Tom Morks posted on the Fizzle blog about his experiences with pay what you want pricing. I thought it was kind of a unique concept, just allowing people to pay what they can. So I mentioned the idea to Abby. I think at first she thought I was crazy, but then we kept reading more about it. I did some research. I realized that there's some psychology to it. You know, most people, they see pay what you want pricing, they say, okay, this is going to be a great deal. They pull out their credit card. They're excited about buying the book. And I think there's a lot of people who initially type in a dollar and then they're like, you know what? I just don't feel right doing that. Let me put in five or let me put in 10. So I'm guessing that happened quite a bit, but it was that Tom Morks guy that, and I talked with him back and forth leading up to the launch about if our strategy made sense and his thoughts. And then we used Gumroad as our payment processor for the book. And they make it really easy to do that flexible pricing. So in the, when you're setting it up, instead of just typing 24 in the amount, you can just type in one plus so that people can put in any amount they want from a dollar and up. It's kind of funny too. There's some odd amounts, like $13.21 someone would type in. Like, why, where they came up with that number, I have no idea. And there's actually quite a few people who put in more than the recommended 24. I mean, we had, there's a lot of people that paid 35. I think someone paid 40.
It was my 30th birthday, too, when we launched. So a couple of people did 30 and, like, wrote me an email saying, I did 30 because it's your 30th birthday. Like, stuff like that. Oh. And we had people, too, that, like, would come back and ask us. They would say, like, oh, I paid $5 for it, but then I read it and it was worth so much more to me. Can I go back and contribute more? And there's a way for them to do that, too. So we've had several of those.
Yeah, Gumroad makes it really easy for people to contribute more in the future. And you can sort the list and figure out who paid what amount. And I mean, we never did this. I would feel weird about doing this, but you can actually email the people that paid just a dollar and say, hey, did you like the book? Let me know what you think. And if you want to donate more, you can. There's a lot of people that use pay what you want pricing, and they use that strategy to try and increase sales a little bit.
That's really interesting. And I think it's like a testament to how great the book is that people who got it for a steal came back later and said, I've got to pay you more for this because, you know, it was too good. It was worth a lot more. So that's really neat.
And it was interesting, too. I mean, as far as pay what you want pricing, we were super nervous about launch day. I mean, we just had no idea. We thought there was a chance that everyone would come in there and pay a dollar and we would sell couple hundred copies and each person would just pay a dollar. I mean, we were legitimately afraid. We even talked the night before saying that I need to monitor the prices that are coming in. And if it's just way, if the average is just way too ridiculously low, that we needed to change it to fix pricing. Fortunately, that didn't happen. People are very generous. But I think the first day we averaged between $8 and $9 a sale. And then over the course of the summer, the average price paid actually increased over time, which I thought was kind of interesting. Not sure why that happened, but it was definitely something I paid attention to, the average price that people would pay.
So let's talk a little bit more about the launch strategy for this book. I know you both had a very organized plan in place, so I'm not sure who wants to start, but I think, Abby, you probably I'm guessing that Donnie maybe came up with some of the plans, and then Abby was the one who followed through and executed on them. But you guys will have to correct me if I got that wrong.
No, that's pretty much how it went. I mean, I know my audience better than he does, so if he was saying, you know, you should email them 17 times between this and this, I'd be like, no, we're not going to do that. But instead, you know, we can do this on Instagram or whatever. So, but he did lay out, I guess, the skeleton of it. And then I just went through and kind of tweaked it because I know the people that, you know, I'm writing for. So, yeah. And then I did like all of the writing aspects of it. I started, let's see, probably, I don't know, the first time I went to a hotel to work on it. So, you know, 3 or 4 months out saying, I'm working on a secret project. Stay tuned to see what it is. And just like kind of building up interest every now and then on like social media. And then I think it was like a month before the launch, I actually announced on the blog in a post like, hey, this is what I've been up to. I'm writing this book on blogging. It's coming out on my 30th birthday, June 10th. So make sure you sign up for emails to get all the latest info on it and whatever. And then it was a really big push from that time, from a month out when I announced it on the blog to at the actual launch day. I mean, between all my social media and emails, I mean, people, I probably did something once a day. It probably averaged out to once a day or more, just so people knew, like if they weren't going to buy the book, it wasn't because they didn't know it was there. I would do snippets on Instagram. And I would send emails to my list and then take parts of those and like post them on my Facebook page and say, hey, look, the email list got all this info. Sign up for the email list so you can get it too, which really helped. I think the email list was like the biggest part of launch. That's where really most of our sales came from. I think at the time we launched, I think we had about 6,000 people on our email list, which looking back, it wasn't that much compared to these days, but those people were like really excited and like prepared because we had sent like this string of emails before telling them what to expect. The night before, we sent them an email kind of announcing, hey, we're doing pay what you want pricing. This is what time it's going live. This is where you go, kind of giving them all of the information they needed to make the decision. So then in the morning when it went live, they knew where they were supposed to go, what it was going to cost them, what to do, and then the sales just, you know, kind of started rolling in immediately after that. And then, do you want to jump in?
Once you set that launch day, you need to work backwards with their launch plan. So Abby and I just created another Google Doc launch plan for Framework ebook, and we had right at the very beginning, we knew what day we wanted to launch it on Abby's birthday to kind of add to the fun. And so then we worked backwards. If we launched it on a Tuesday or a Monday, you know, whatever day, we know that morning an email is going to go out. So we'll put that into a launch plan. If you're launching the night before, you need to send an email as well, giving all the details and don't leave anything to mystery. And then you can just work backwards from there. So I think that the best way to do a launch plan is not to say, okay, what can I do today to prep for the launch of this book? But you pick a launch day. And then you work backwards from there, like what makes the most sense? When should I post about this book? When should I do a guest post? How many times should I mention this on social media? It just helps working back that way. I think a big problem that I see a lot of people make is they don't build any buzz around the launch of their product. So all of a sudden one day, you know, I'll follow someone's blog. That, you know, maybe I really, really like the blog. And then all of a sudden one day in an email, it's like, hey, I have this thing, buy it here. And I haven't heard anything about it. Even months in advance, it's nice to kind of get little hints like, hey, this is coming. This is what it's going to be about. I'm still trying to figure out pricing, but it's coming. And then as the time gets closer to the actual launch, there's kind of this anticipation. You expect it, you know it's going to happen, and you're kind of looking forward to that. And so then I think everyone is just ready to go on launch day, and you can have a pretty good first day and first week of sales.
I think that's a very good point. Abby, for your launch strategy, how did guest posting and other bloggers play into your strategy?
It was absolutely huge. I mean, I don't think that the launch would have gone as well as it did if we tried to do it on our own, just from our end. Since I had a lot of friends on the back end, like reading the book in advance and giving me tips and their thoughts and things like that, I talked to some of them about guest posting and prepared content and gave it to them. And so I had, I don't know, 6 or 7 guest posts go live the day of the launch. I interviewed with you guys. You guys' podcast went up the day of the launch as well. So that was helpful. I had a couple of my friends who read it. Rather than me writing a post for them, they did reviews of it. So I think there were 2 or 3 of those that went up. And so there was just, my goal was that if you were anywhere near the home decor niche or creative blogging niche on June 10th, you knew that Building a Framework was launching that day. So besides those guest posts, then I emailed 50 of my blogging friends, other than the ones that were helping with the guest posts. And I just said, hey, Framework's coming out today. I would love your help promoting. Here are some tweets that you can send out. Here are some graphics you can use. And here are links to pins. Like, I try to make it super easy for them to share. And I said, thank you so much for the way you've influenced me. And let me know if there's anything I can ever do for you to help you, you know, with any projects you're working on. So a lot of them helped me out. Twitter, anybody who follows a bunch of us on Twitter probably thought there was some weird thing going on because, like, everybody was tweeting the same couple tweets that I had sent out to them over and over. It was kind of cool to see that happening. And then the other group of people I emailed was, because it was a book about blogging, I mentioned a lot of bloggers that I learned from or, you know, that had inspired me or had written good things about blogging throughout the book. So I emailed every one of the bloggers that I mentioned and sent them a copy of the book that morning and just said, hey, you know, I just wanted to let you know I mentioned you in here and I linked to your blog and thank you for the positive influence, you know, you've had on me as a blogger, and I wrote this book about it and you're in it. So thank you so much. And I got a really good response from those people too. And they, you know, ended up helping promote, like, I didn't ask them to or anything. I just said thank you. But a lot of them ended up, you know, doing that just out of the kindness of their heart as well. So kind of drew in as many people as I could to help with it. And I think it really paid off for us in the end. So
those are great ideas for just reaching out to everyone in your networks and making sure everyone was sharing the word about your book. And I love how organized you were with, you know, having those tweets ready to go, those pins ready to go. You just made it so easy for all of your blogging friends to do you that favor and talk about the book. So after you ended pay what you want pricing and you transitioned to the fixed pricing of $24 for the ebook, you set up an affiliate program for the book. Can you talk to us a little bit about how that's going? What things are working with the affiliate program, or any recommendations for others who are wanting to set up an affiliate program for their products?
Sure. Yeah, we thought long and hard about an affiliate program. We even considered setting one up for the launch, but we figured there's so much stuff going on at that time and with the pay what you want pricing, and it just would have been one more thing for us to work out for launch. So we launched in June, and then in October we decided we wanted to get an affiliate program set up. And we also decided that the pay what you want pricing, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense with an affiliate program. I know some people still use pay what you want pricing with an affiliate program, but we decided at that point, hey, let's fix the price and let's set up an affiliate program for the book. Unfortunately, the payment processor we had been using since launch, so from June to October, Gumroad, fantastic. I think it's the easiest payment processing tool you can possibly use. It's really good. The checkout experience is really nice. It converts really well. But they don't offer an affiliate program. There's no easy way to set up an affiliate program with Gumroad. Some people have figured out there's different plugins you can use, but none of those solutions seemed really good to me. So I looked around at a lot of different options. So a lot of people use eJunkie, but I just wasn't a fan of how it looked. Maybe that's a terrible reason not to use it, but it just seemed kind of like a piece of software from like 1997 or something. So I found something called Sendow. Web address is sendow.com, and it's a UK-based company, but they do a really good job and make it really easy to set up an affiliate program. So it's another payment processor, just like Gumroad. With Sendow, people can click on a link, create an account, and get their affiliate links, and then Sendal keeps track of all of that for us. So the way we did that is we opened the affiliate program just to a few people at first. Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Abby, how we decided to do that and what we did?
Sure. I first, when we started out, just sent an email to kind of people that were closest to me, that people that helped with launch and that I knew who had read the book, and just said, hey, we're doing this now. We would love for you to get paid for talking about it. They had already been talking about it and just out of the kindness of their heart doing it. So I sent an email to probably, I don't know, 30 people to start out with and invited them to be part of it. And they started signing up. And then a little while later, we just emailed the entire list of everybody who purchased Building a Framework. And, hey, we're doing this now. If you've read the book and you want to promote it, we'd love to, you know, pay you for doing that. And then those people they signed up then. They've continued to sign up. They've been really helpful in promoting the book for us. So.
Yeah, we haven't had any technical issues with the Sendal affiliate program at all. I thought it would be just a logistical nightmare, people with problems, you know, when are you going to send me my money, and this doesn't work and that doesn't work. None of that's happened. So it's been really, really easy to set up. So that went better than I thought. The amount of sales that the affiliates drive actually is a lot worse than we initially thought. I mean, it's good. It's extra. But I don't think, what I'm trying to say is that I don't think an affiliate program is absolutely necessary, at least initially. And also, I don't think just having an affiliate program is automatically going to double or triple your sales. It's not just going to automatically spread like wildfire because people can promote it and earn a commission. I can see why there's a lot of people that don't use an affiliate program. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And you also have to be careful about, one of the things we worried about was who is going to be promoting this book. You know, we didn't want crazy spammers to get a hold of these affiliate links and make weird YouTube videos and all. You never know what you never know what people could do. So we kind of monitor who signs up, and there's been some iffy ones, but they haven't made any sales, so we're not really too worried about that. But a lot of people opt not to set up an affiliate program because they feel like it protects their brand a little bit more. They feel like they have a little bit more control over how it's promoted and that type of thing. And so I go back and forth with the affiliate program. Yeah, I think it's a good idea. It's easy to do. I mean, I can pay the affiliates through PayPal pretty easily once a month. But I don't think it's absolutely necessary thing to have if you're launching an ebook or a product.
And from the feeling side of things, I feel like it's a good way, even if, you know, we haven't made a killing because of affiliates. We do. I mean, when we've had sales, they have definitely contributed, and we see, you know, a jump in the numbers a little bit. But I just feel like having people who feel like they're part of something and who feel sort of a little piece of ownership over that and are willing to talk about it in such a way that, like, hey, this is a thing that I genuinely love and I read it and you should read it too. Like, to have people out there talking about your book that way is, I think, a powerful tool. So even if the conversion isn't great and our sales didn't like completely skyrocket, I really do think that like bringing people into the fold like that and building those relationships and having them feel like they have a part in your brand is an important piece of it. As well, like as much, if not more, than the actual sales numbers.
Those are interesting points. I can definitely see the pros and cons of both in terms of having affiliates for a product. And you actually, both of you brought up points I hadn't even really thought of before. So that was great. In terms of your affiliate sales, I'm curious, and if you don't mind sharing, how many affiliates do you have at this point? And what percentage of sales out of your total ebook sales do they contribute to each month?
So as far as the number of affiliates, right now we have 102 people who have signed up for our affiliate program. Out of the 102 people, probably only 20 to 25 of them have actually made a sale through the program. So it's a small percentage that have even made any affiliate sales. And I would say sales from affiliates probably accounts for about 10 to 15, depending on the month, maybe 10 to 15 percent of the sales. We have done some special deals around Christmas time and in different times of the year where we kind of give the affiliate partners a reason to promote the book. And so those months, the affiliates will account for maybe 20 to 30% of sales. So it's not a huge percentage of the sales, but it's still significant.
From a technical standpoint here, I know at the beginning of the year, all of the VAT tax EU stuff coming out. And I have heard that Gumroad now handles all of that remitting of the VAT tax now. So that probably doesn't affect Sendal, because Sendal you're just using for your affiliates, and then Gumroad can handle any of that tax on the Gumroad side since everybody purchases there.
Yeah, so whenever that whole VAT thing happened, we disabled all in Gumroad, we disabled all sales from EU countries. We just said we don't have the time to figure out how to send money to some tax office in Europe. I mean, it just wasn't worth it for us. So we disabled all those sales. And if someone from one of those countries wants to buy the book, I mean, a lot of times we just give it to them. I mean, we feel kind of bad about that. Now with Sendal, we had the same issue. And so we disabled all sales to EU countries in Sendal as well. It's kind of like some fraud filters you can put on pretty easily. It's just check boxes like, you know, exclude these countries. So we've done those exclusions from the EU in Sendal. But yeah, recently Gumroad fixed the problem. I mean, I really feel like Gumroad is ahead of the curve in a lot of different ways. So they said, we're going to make this as easy as possible for our merchants. We're going to figure out where they're buying the product from. We're going to collect that tax, and we're going to send a tax to the right agency. So as soon as Gumroad announced that, and as soon as they set that up, we were able to re-enable all of the European Union countries and make them able to purchase Abby's ebooks in Gumroad.
That's good. Now, I know you're not using Sendal for your shopping cart feature. You're using the Gumroad. Do you know, though, for people who use Sendal for their shopping cart, if they have also followed suit like Gumroad, or do you not know?
No, Sendal hasn't done what Gumroad has done. So with Sendal, Sendal integrates with a couple different payment processors. So whenever someone clicks on the buy button and it goes through Sendal, they can pay with Stripe, which is a payment processor that Sendal seamlessly works with. And then there's also a PayPal button that they can click, and they can pay with PayPal. So none of the EU VAT stuff is controlled through Stripe or through PayPal. They really have no idea where the purchaser's at, but Sendal itself can tell through IP addresses and some other technology that I don't understand. And so we've disabled all European Union countries from being able to buy Abby's ebooks in Sendal. Does that kind of answer the question?
Yeah, okay, so it sounds like Sendal.
There's two cart systems. So there's two, we have dual landing pages. The Sendal people go through one, and the Gumroad people go through another. So you can Gumroad landing page if you're from the EU. If you try to go through the Sendal landing page, it will just tell you that it's not available in your country or your location.
So yeah, to explain that a little bit more, for Abby's Framework ebook, if you go to justagirlinherblog.com/book, you'll see a landing page with the buy now button, $24. When you click on that, it brings up the Gumroad payment processing system where they can purchase it, and they figured out that whole VAT thing. So this URL, justagirlinherblog.com/book, this is the URL we promote. This is the URL that we send people to purchase the book. Now, if you go to justagirlinherblog.com/framework, which is a slightly different URL, you'll see the exact same landing page. I mean, it's identical. We just copy the page over. But when you click the Buy Now button, it brings up Sendal payment processing. It brings up the Sendal shopping cart. So you'll see the shopping cart, and there's a checkout button. If you click that, you'll make a payment through Stripe. Or there's a PayPal option that you can use below that. So does that? So our affiliates are always going to plug just a girl on her blog.com/framework. That's the link we tell them to send people to, because that's the Sendow landing page versus the Gumroad landing page. It's kind of a weird system. It's kind of a weird way to do that, but so far it's worked pretty well.
And we wish we could streamline it, but you know, there's pluses to Gumroad that we need it for. And then in order to do the affiliate program and to make sure that our affiliates were getting like paid accurately, we felt like the only way we could do that was set it up through Sendow. So it's not a perfect system, but it's the best we could do under the circumstances.
Okay. I just assumed, I guess I don't quite understand why, like, even with an affiliate link, so Sendow makes you purchase through them.
Yeah, that's pretty close to how it works. Sendow actually doesn't make any money through payment processing. We pay a $15 a month fee, but they've set up their system to integrate with Stripe, and they've set up their system to integrate with PayPal and a few other payment processors. So you're right, Sarah. Sendow is not a payment processor, but through Sendow shopping cart, people can pay with Stripe or Sendow or a few other options. Unfortunately, Gumroad isn't one of those options. So every month we pay payment processing fees. We pay payment processing fees to Gumroad, to Stripe, and then also to PayPal, if that makes sense. As much as I like Gumroad, I like Sendow too. I think there's more and more people are going to start to use Sendow. I have a feeling that it's going to catch on. I think they're doing well as a company. They do a good job.
Unless the whole VAT thing gets taken care of on the Sendow end, I think that's a huge deal, don't you think?
Right.
It is a huge deal. And what's funny, Sendow is a UK company, so they're in the European and they haven't figured it out. But honestly, I mean, we may be giving up a few percent of possible sales, but I wouldn't say that there's a ton of people from Europe trying to buy the book. It's hard to say. I haven't tracked that specifically or anything.
That's true.
Let's talk about the landing page for a minute. I know you guys have this really great, clean, distraction-free page so that, you know, a reader knows exactly what to do on that page, which is learn about the book and then buy the book. Can you talk to us about how you were able to do that?
Sure, I can talk about that a little bit. That was, you know, as Abby did the real work of writing and promoting this thing, I was kind of doing some of this technical stuff like the landing page. But in our child theme for we run the Genesis framework, and then we have a child theme from Restored 316 Designs, which we really like. And whenever you go in and you create a new page, there's an option on the right, and there's a good chance your theme has this as well, a landing page template built in. So you can create a page with that template, and what it'll do is it'll take away the sidebar. It'll take away a lot of the header stuff. It still wasn't perfect. The page was too wide for us. Our ads were still showing up, and we still had some footer information. So I just tried to figure out how to go in and play with the CSS in the child theme style sheet. So I was able to narrow the page a little bit. I was able to put in a little bit of code to prevent ads from showing on the page. And then that's how we kind of got that clean page that we could make the landing page with. And then from there, it was just, you know, just your standard editing in WordPress. You add the text and the pictures, and the button is also some CSS stuff that I added into her some of her style sheets in her child theme. And trust me, I have no idea what I'm doing with this coding stuff. I just kind of figure out what I need to know when I need to know it, and then I usually forget how to do it. So it's not like I can like write code. Like I knew I needed to do this, so I Googled how to add a button, and then I found some code and pasted it in there, and hopefully I hoped it didn't break the internet or anything, and it worked out. So it's not too bad of a landing page.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. Another question that I had for you guys was, could you talk about your decision not to have this be a Kindle book?
Sure. Well, from my side of things, it was really important. Like, if you read the book, there's a ton of pictures and screenshots and like pretty formatting and that kind of thing. And that was all important to me to have in there just because, I don't know, I'm a visual learner. So I know all those like sort of tutorials and things that walk you through step by step would be helpful for me. So I wanted to make sure they were in there, and that would have been extremely limited with Kindle. But as even from like a money-making side and that sort of strategy, we would, even if the pictures weren't an issue, we still would have chosen, I think, to do it ourselves. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Sure. So with I buy tons of Kindle books all the time. I absolutely love it. But when you're in the Kindle store, you notice that the prices of their ebooks are pretty low. So a $24 book in there just doesn't make sense. And we felt like we couldn't offer the same product on Abby's blog for a higher price than we offered it in the Kindle store. So that's the reason we decided not to put it there. A $24 price just wouldn't work in the Kindle store, and we didn't feel right charging different prices for basically the same thing. Now, if someone wrote a $10 ebook or a $7 ebook, and they weren't concerned about the formatting limitations of Kindle ebooks, then I think that the Kindle store is a great way to go, and we're going to be experimenting with that in the future for sure.
Great, good to know.
I have to say, too, that after reading your book and having read many other books on blogging or online marketing that are from the Kindle store, that you guys are right to put a higher price on your book, because I think it's incredibly thorough and incredibly detailed. And so that does seem to me to make a lot of sense. And I hope that people, too, when they come and visit your site and see your book, I hope that they know that, hey, you really are getting more than double the value of what you would get if you bought a book from the Kindle store on blogging. So that's my two cents.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
So as we wrap up, we always like to ask about a funny mom moment or dad moment in this case. So do you guys have any fun stories to share about your boys these days?
So the other day, Caleb had an ear infection, so I was taking him to the doctor, and I was getting ready to put him in our minivan, and I was trying to pull open the door, and, you know, we live in Pennsylvania, so it's freezing. It was really cold that day, and I'm trying to pull the sliding door, and it wouldn't open, and he goes, "Mom, oh, no, it's frozen salad." Instead of frozen solid. And so I just thought that was kind of funny. He has this gift where he like hears phrases and then he hears them wrong and will repeat them back to people, and we have probably dozens of those that we could say with him, but frozen salad was his latest.
And he's a 3-year-old, and he's always saying funny stuff like that, mixing up words and everything.
He's a cutie. He definitely is. Yeah, I feel bad sometimes because I have way more, like, funny stories or cute things to tell people or share on Facebook about what Sullivan does these days. And, like, the girls and maybe Connor a little bit, too. Like, they're outgrowing that, like, cute, funny.
Yeah, right.
I mean, they're still cute, funny, but it's the younger ones where it's at right now.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah. Well, for our listeners out there, can you tell them where to find you again?
Sure. If you go to the blog, is justagirlinherblog.com. And if you're looking for building a framework, you can go to justagirlinherblog.com/framework. Make sure you click on Beth Ann and Sarah's affiliate link to get there.
Thanks. Please. Well, thank you so much. This was lots of fun. I'm glad we were able to do this, and I know everyone will learn a lot from this as well.
Well, I hope you found that episode as helpful as I did. I know Beth Ann and I were really excited to pick Donnie and Abby's brain, as we ourselves are planning on launching an ebook in May of 2015. So stay tuned for that. But we are really excited to learn from them about what worked and what didn't, and strategies that they employed when they launched their ebook. And as I mentioned earlier, if you are interested in Abby's ebook, which we honestly do highly recommend. It's not just that they are related to us. But if you are interested in her book, you can find it through our affiliate link, brilliantbusinessmoms.com/framework. And I hope you'll at least check it out and see if it might be a good resource for you. As always, I hope you're having a great day. I am so glad that you took the time to tune in to our episode today. If you're looking for the show notes, they're at brilliantbusinessmoms.com/77. Now it's your turn to head out there and be brilliant.